From the Marquee Media Studio inside Mark Tank, it's the Mark Haney Show.
Super excited today. We are joined by Cam Iwasa. He is a professional athlete, actually a retired professional soccer player. So today we're going to be talking about his career, the principles that he learned in building that successful career, and because it's not easy to achieve the highest level in sports, let alone business. So today's going to be an interesting show because we'll talk a little bit about business, because Cam's also a commercial real estate professional and a professional broadcaster. So we'll get into a little bit of all of that. And if you like today's show, definitely do not forget to like, subscribe, follow. And we are really looking to build our local audience here, and really people who get it, who understand the power of entrepreneurship and want to be around people that know how to win, like Cam. Welcome to the show, Cam. Appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
100%. So now you you grew up in the Sacramento region, and then you became a member of the Sac Republic. Was that like a dream come true?
Yeah, I grew up like right near Sac State, probably 5 minutes from Sac State. It's hard to say it was a dream come true because the team didn't exist when I was growing up.
Oh, you know, okay.
The first year was 2014. So I was already in college when the team actually, you know, came to town. I was in Southern California at the time going to school. So I had no idea kind of what it was going about, you know, what was going on. I had a lot of friends and family that were still in the area that talked about like, hey, this professional soccer team's here and the games are awesome. It's electric and this and that. And so, you know, then it was like, oh, that's really cool. I'd love to just get to a game and check it out at some point. Little did I know I'd end up spending 6 years there.
So like when you went to Jesuit, and I know you guys had a great soccer team. We talked about our mutual friend Conti, but you guys won a lot. But what was the dream then? If there wasn't professional soccer in Sacramento, what was that thing? Was that go play in college?
Yeah, to be honest, like playing professionally wasn't even on my radar when I was in high school. It was just, you know, try to get a scholarship and go play at a good school and, you know, have some fun, enjoy my time. And, you know, lo and behold, I ended up having a pretty successful college career. Fortunately, I went to a team that was really, really good, UC Irvine. We were, you know, 3 out of my 4 years, we finished ranked in the top 25 in the nation. So it was a team that got some eyeballs. And so I had some teammates that were older than me that continued to play after college. And I was kind of looking around. I was like, well, hey, if those guys can do it, I think I can do it. And after my senior year, my coach introduced me to an agent. And that was the guy that ended up representing me my entire career. And that was kind of the start of the story.
That's great. What do you think about now that, you know, people in college can now get paid? Instead of you know, that being the amateur, they, you know, their likeness and all that, they can get paid for their following on social media and so on.
I think it makes sense. I mean, especially when you're looking at it from like a college football standpoint. I mean, those guys generate so much revenue for the schools that it always seemed unfair to me that you had like a Johnny Manziel guy that was. I heard something one time. They had like a you know, banquet or whatever, and it was like $10,000 a seat to sit at the same table as Johnny Manziel, but he wasn't allowed to make a dollar.
He gets none of it. Yeah,
yeah. And it's
and
like,
then you got guys like Reggie Bush now that you know, he was penalized, then they take away his Heisman, and now everybody gets paid for it. It's like fairness. It's finally upon us at some level.
Yeah, and if you look at things from like a business standpoint, which obviously I know is that's your brand, right? Like, mm-hmm. You're building a brand, your own business. These guys have built their brand. They're building their business. Even though they're in college, I mean, the amount of eyeballs these guys get is off the charts. And so I think you got to strike when the iron's hot sometimes, because you look at some guys like a Johnny Manziel who flamed out professionally. You know, I know there's, you know, he did make some money when he was in college. That documentary just came out that
yeah.
Kind of details all of it. But he could have made a whole lot more if it was legal for him to do so at the time. So I think that's a missed opportunity and, you know, to me, unfair in the long run. But, you know, it's cool to see that guys nowadays are allowed to take full advantage.
So you, to me, it seems like you kind of got this, you know, from an outsider, like a dream life. You have this young family that you guys just had a baby, right?
Yeah, I had our first daughter, well, first kid in general, but our daughter was born just over 7 weeks ago.
Yeah, so that's exciting. And you're a broadcaster, so you're a retired professional athlete in your hometown for the Soccer Republic, our beloved soccer team. Now you're doing the announcing, the broadcasting on Fox 40, and but you also have this, is it a side gig? Is your real estate sort of a side gig? How do you prioritize all that?
Well, I'd say the broadcasting is a side gig. Technically, I'm like the B broadcaster. You know, there's Rob McAllister, the play-by-play guy, and Adam Moffitt, an ex-teammate of mine, is the main color guy. And so whenever Adam can't make it, or sometimes we'll do a three-man booth, I'll come in. So I've probably done, I think I did 5 or 6 broadcasts this year out of the 34 games. So, you know, it's certainly not a full-time gig, but it's something that's really, really fun for me. And, you know, the more and more I do it, the more comfortable I'm getting. And I feel like I'm getting just better at that job.
Practice,
but yeah. It definitely is. I would definitely say that's the side gig.
Well, okay, let's talk about your side gig for a second here. There's the play-by-play, and then there's the color commentating. Do they typically, they want somebody with experience playing to do the color, I would assume. But the play-by-play, that can get done by any schmuck. Even a guy like me could probably do it, right?
Yeah, but if you ask me, that's the part that's much, much harder.
It seems like it.
So you need the reps way more to do play-by-play than you do color. I think for me especially, when I did my first broadcast, which was the year after I retired, it was, I don't want to say easy, but it was easier for me because I already knew who all the guys were. It was the same guys I had played against the year before, outside of maybe, you know, one or two people here and there. The guys on the team for the Republic are a bunch of ex-teammates of mine, so I know them in and out. And so talking about them as players, talking about the system that the coach wants to run, things like that, it's all very fresh in my mind. So I didn't even have to really do much homework to be prepared. Mm-hmm. You know, this year being, you know, another year out of it, there's more guys that I don't know. There's more, okay. You know, coaches are changing. So the systems are changing and things like that. So it's a little bit more of, you know, I had to do a little bit more homework for the games this year. And, you know, as it continues, the further and further I get away from having played, I think it'll just continue to be a little bit more extra work.
Is there somebody that acts as a mentor for this part of your life? That for broadcasting?
Well, Adam, who I mentioned is the main guy, has been really cool because so he retired at the end of 2018. And then starting in 2020 became the full-time broadcaster for the team. So he had been getting plenty of reps, and he was a guy that I kind of leaned on for a little bit of advice here and there. And, you know, just the people that are in it all the time, they were giving me constructive feedback. You know, hey, you say this too much, you're saying too much, various things that are kind of subconscious, but if you start paying attention to them, they make a difference in the quality of the broadcast for people listening.
They do. When I first started my show, which was a while ago, I think it was 7 or 8 years ago, we started off on Sports 1140, and I was nervous to be on the show, you know, doing a radio live. It was live radio. We had to cut the commercial break and all this sort of stuff, so it was kind of like a lot to digest in terms of complication. It wasn't just coming in talking about small business or coming in and asking somebody questions. There was a lot more gyration than what I was comfortable with, but I had a mentor. The reason I ask is Scott Marsh. I don't know if you know that guy or not. He does play-by-play, and he does stuff with the Republic, UC Davis, but he's a professional broadcaster for Sports 1140 or Sactown Sports now. But I was mentored for a business show by somebody who did like play-by-play announcing and kind of color commentary. So I feel like I have been exposed at some level to almost being a broadcaster because I've been hanging around Scott Marsh so long.
Yeah, and it's very similar, I think. You know, the radio show, in my opinion, would be even more difficult because with the play-by-play, or especially for color commentary, I'm just seeing what I see and then talking about it, right? So it's the content is easy. It's created right in front of me all the time. Whereas for a radio show, you have to come in prepared with all of your notes. This is what I want to go through today. And especially if you're on it by yourself, I mean, I don't want to listen to myself talk that much. So I wouldn't want to be solo on a show.
I don't listen to my show anymore, but I used to listen to my show back and just pick out all the and all the stupid crap I would say. And I don't know that I got a lot better, but I felt like I found real bad weaknesses that I, you know, that I've been working on for the last several years.
Yeah, you know, I love my family, but they're my biggest fans and my biggest critics. So
who's the biggest critic?
Definitely my dad. It's not even close. But it, really where it started was when I was still playing, I would do interviews or things like this every once in a while. And I feel like I'm a pretty, you know, intelligent guy, but in those scenarios, I was so like uncomfortable at first that I didn't sound very intelligent when I would talk because it was, again, all the ums. And I used to say, you know, over and over and over. And that was a big thing. So when I was doing post-game interviews or something like this with any sort of media, my dad would always listen back to it and he'd be like, hey, you're doing this, this, and this. And it was like, okay, you know, thanks. But the more and more that I kept those things kind of in the front of my mind and was consciously thinking about it, my interviews got a lot better. And then so taking that into broadcasting was a very good transition that I kind of got those reps already.
Well, you mentioned doing interviews and I see, you know, I'm a big Niner fan. And so I can picture the post-game interview with somebody on the Niners and they go back in the interview process and they question these players or even the coaching staff about specific aspects of the game. In the third quarter, you did this. In the first quarter, you did that. And what were you thinking during that time? And I have to imagine it's hard as a player. You just got done playing, especially if it's football. You've been bumping heads for the last hour and or 2 hours. And to remember what you might have been thinking earlier in the, you know, in the game seems almost impossible. Hey, I got to go back and watch the tape. I really don't know.
The one thing I will say is it's similar to us. It's different than football because soccer is a lot more fluid. Things happen and the game kind of continues. There's not the stoppages in between every play. But if somebody in a post-game interview is asking you a question about a specific play, it was probably either something really good or something really bad.
Ah.
And so you've been thinking about it. You know, it's been haunting you potentially. Yeah, it's going to be pretty easy to remember, I think. So for better or for worse, I think that recall is a lot easier than if they ask you about some mundane play that happened, you know, right in the middle of the game.
Well, what's the most critical thing your dad has said about your broadcasting career?
Mostly just that I like mumbled too much sometimes and maybe not even mumbled, but just, again, it's the repeat of the go-to word, mm-hmm. not being comfortable with the empty space. I think that's something that I was really, really bad at, is I tried to fill space all the time and not realizing that a pause to me that might seem like the longest pause ever to the listener doesn't seem like that long of a pause. And so just getting comfortable with sitting in silence while I gather my thoughts as opposed to saying or, you know, or like, and things like that.
Yeah, these are basic public speaking skills or tips, if you will, that can help any of us in any line of work. It can help us if we're building a commercial real estate business or if we're I've picked myself.
Now I'm in your head.
I'm back to my old habits. Okay, let's talk about winning, because I want to make sure we dive into the state of the real estate business, but because that's really important, I think, to our listeners. But winning is such an elusive thing. There are some people in our world that tend to come out on the winning side of things more often than not. And obviously you have done that in your life, in your short career. You're a young person, but you've really achieved a lot in this short period of time. So maybe let's talk about some of the principles associated with being the best and exceeding expectations and so on. Maybe where does it start? Any thoughts on that?
I think all the cliches are pretty true. The amount of work you put in is what you're going to get out of something for the most part, which is why I think I gravitated towards real estate and something like that industry, because it really is an eat what you kill type of business. There's no salaries, but there's also no cap on what you can make. You can be satisfied making kind of an average amount of money, or you can grind and try to be really, really successful. And I think sports is the same way. You can just try to make the team. You can just try to make it into the starting lineup, or you can try to be the best player on the team. You can try to be a team that finishes middle of the table or a team that finishes at the top. What you're satisfied with will oftentimes dictate what you end up doing. And so I think a lot of people are satisfied just being okay. And that's all fine. If that's what makes you happy and you want to put in a little bit of work to be just fine, that's great if you're happy. But I think people that are truly driven are never truly satisfied and are going to continue to put in you know, the top 1%, top five, whatever you want to be, that sort of work in order to have that sort of success. And I think the real estate thing and sports go very hand in hand in that way.
Yeah. You mentioned hard work. That's kind of a given, but setting your sights high, right? That's kind of what I took out of that. Setting your sights high, whether it be in soccer or other sports or in business, is kind of what a big part of what separates the people that actually achieve the greatness versus the people that sort of achieve the average. And one of the things that you said before the show is, I'll never have a job as fun. This, I'm paraphrasing. As fun as my last job, right? Playing professional soccer, but real estate is great. And I would challenge you then on your own that comment. I mean, there probably is a number in real estate that would be as great as playing professional soccer. I don't know. That's kind of an interesting thing. What site could you set for? Or what could any of us set for ourselves in commercial real estate or something like that, that would be as cool as playing, you know, professional sports? Now, I don't know of one because I'm a wannabe athlete and I was never that good. But I have to imagine there is a way to do that.
Well, part of setting goals for me is making goals that are actually attainable, mm-hmm. and then reassessing goals at a certain point. So, for instance, you were asking about, what was the dream of trying to play for the Republic or something? When I was in high school, that wasn't my dream. That wasn't a goal of mine to play professionally. The goal of mine was to get to college and be successful in college. And then once you make that happen, you reassess, okay, I think I can do this. I can be a starter on one of the best teams in college soccer, blah, blah, blah. You work up and up. Next thing you know, my goal is to be the best player on a professional team and break records and things like that. So professionally now, you know, my first year in the business, my goals are not what the goals of somebody that's been doing it for a decade are, right? My goals are to become more and more of an expert of what I'm doing, learn the industry, learn the ins and outs, get to the point where I am comfortable that I can walk into a room and hold my own amongst people that have been doing it for two decades, right? Having that sort of the grind of just information, feeling like I belong as a professional mm-hmm. in this industry. 10 years from now, my goals are probably going to be a lot different. It's going to be second nature that I know what I'm doing. And it's going to be, hey, my goal is to make this much, close this many deals, you know, do X amount of numbers and do it in a way that I still have plenty of time to watch my kids grow up or something like that. You know what I mean? So I believe that a big part of being extremely successful is reassessing goals constantly. You can't just say, this is my goal, and then you hit that goal and you're satisfied, or have a goal that's so unattainable from today that it feels like too much of an uphill climb. I think mm-hmm. those mini goals in between where you're starting and where that kind of mountaintop for you is are really, really important.
I agree with that. And one of the things that I've had to overcome in my life is setbacks, especially in entrepreneurship. I have to imagine it happens, you know, on the soccer field as well, is you set the goal and it's never quite as easily attained as what I thought it would be. At least that was for me. It's like, oh, wow, this is always twice as or 10 times as hard as I thought. And so these setbacks can be demoralizing for a lot of us. And any ideas or thoughts around dealing with setbacks and adversity as you're trying to achieve something important in your life?
Yeah, I think that's where the long-term view does help, is when you have a setback, because I would defy you to find somebody who's their trajectory in whatever business it is, whether it's sports, whether it's real estate, whether it's any other sort of entrepreneurship, where their trajectory is just a straight uphill climb. You're not going to find it, right? Nobody, except for maybe the very, very lucky few, are just straight uphill and don't have any dips. Yeah. It's always, for me, the thing that I relate to the most is professionally, things are going great. You feel like no one's going to stop you. And then you have that injury that knocks you out for a month.
Yeah. It's amazing how even the most talented players or business people, public speakers, they are still human. So everyone who has that, what looks like an easy climb to success because all the natural talent, has got some other weaknesses or things that show up in their life that can drag you down
just
a little bit.
Things that are unpredictable.
Yeah.
And to keep it on the sports topic and something that'll hit close to home for you is you talk about the Niners and they're on fire. They look like clearly the best team in the league. They got Christian McCaffrey and Debo and these guys that are the best skill position players maybe in the league. McCaffrey certainly is at the top of that list. And you go into Cleveland and there's some bad weather and a couple of guys get knocked out of the game. And next thing you know, you're missing a field goal at the end to ruin your perfect season at the time. And like, you can either be devastated and be like, oh, now it's over because McCaffrey might be out for a couple of weeks and, you know, we just got to regroup on the fly and this and that. But, or you could pick yourselves up. You can look at what you got. You can get guys can, they're now, McCaffrey's goal is get back on the field, right? It's not anything more important than get back on the field. And then you can start back from where you took, where you left off of the ultimate goal of the season. But it's creating different goals within the goals to get you where you need to be to continue that trajectory.
Well, Scott and I, my business partner over here, the guy that helps me with the show, among other things, he and I are talking Niners all the time because we love the Niners. And so, yeah, Cleveland was a tough loss. They're still 5-1. By the time this airs, hopefully they're, 7-1 or something like that. This will probably air in a week or two. The part of the Niners that have impressed me the most, I think, this year is how they have decided. They said in advance that Brock Purdy was going to be the number one quarterback, even though he could barely throw. He could throw every other day during like the spring. They still decided that they gave him the number one spot because of what he did last year. Mr. Irrelevant, drafted last in the professional football draft, and then does well, and they still believed in him even though he had the elbow problem. I love that about their approach. I think a lot of other people were praying for Trey Lance to get more of an opportunity here, but I'm pulling for the underdog.
Yeah, I think there's multiple factors there. I think for Purdy, it makes such a big difference having the confidence of the team behind you, knowing that not only is Trey Lance not going to be the guy, but we're actually going to ship him out of town so that there's no doubt you are our guy, right? So I think it's a lot easier to perform at your best when you're not having to look over your shoulder at all. That's A. I think B, it says a lot about the Niners front office that they can swallow their pride a little bit. Because I think there's a lot of people that if they spent the capital that the Niners spent on getting Trey Lance.
Yeah, if you're just watching, they gave away a bunch of, I think 3 first-round draft picks. And
it was something crazy.
Yeah, to move up in the draft to draft Trey Lance third. And then he got injured, sadly. I think he's got all kinds of talent and ability, but he got injured. And then Brock comes in and, wow.
But to that point, when you give up that kind of draft capital and just in general, you spend that much on a player, a lot of people are really incentivized to try to make themselves look good and force it to make him be the guy so that you don't look like, oh, we blew it on that pick. But I think it says a lot about them and being comfortable with where they're at, that they're able to move on from him and say, hey, look, we found a gem, diamond in the rough in Purdy, and we can go ahead and cut our losses with Trey Lance. I think they got back like a 6th round pick or something from the Cowboys, right? And so it says a lot that they are able to do that, and it puts him in the best possible position for him to succeed and continue to grow his confidence.
We see that same type of, I think of it as like sunk cost bias, where you it might even be in real estate, where you've been trying to run it this one way for a while, and it used to work at some level, and you're just, you can't break that commitment to it because for what is more like a psychological reason or emotional reason. And really it's time to pivot, right? It's time. And sometimes you need just enough information to make the decision to pivot, but yet we tend to sort of hang on as humans to investments that maybe we need to dump.
Yeah. Once you put a certain amount of time into something, you want to prove yourself right that time wasn't wasted. And, even if you do pivot away from that exact thing, it doesn't mean it was a waste of time because you learned something in the process. I think that's the biggest thing, is you either win or you learn. That's like another old cliche. Like, all of these cliches are, they're cliches because they're true. Like, largely all of them are very, very true. And so the only loss is if you do put time into something and you realize it's a mistake and you pivot and then you go and make that same mistake again and you waste your time. That's when it was a loss, because you're not figuring out what to do differently in order to be successful with the next one.
Yeah. You know, Brock Purdy makes the rest of the team better, right? You've got great weapons, and you know, you mentioned them, and the Niners are loaded with that offensively and defensively. But thinking about that, making other members of your team better, there are some people that just have that knack. And I have to imagine you saw that in your career as well. What are kind of the things that we should be thinking about, maybe as younger athletes or parts of a team that might be in business, around making other people better? And, you know, showing some of that's unselfishness, but I mean, thoughts around making the rest of your team better, because ultimately the goal is to win the championship or build the successful business.
Yeah, the best teams I've ever been a part of were always greater than the sum of its parts. You have a lot of time to be a good team in whatever sport or a good team in whatever industry. You need talent. You're not going to scrape together the bottom of the barrel and then finish as the best team in the league. It's just unrealistic. So you do need legitimate talent. But to be a really, truly great team, you need that talent to also be working together in the type of way that everything just runs smoothly. And so if you might have the two best players in the league, but if they're clashing and they don't get along and they're not playing together, especially in a sport like soccer where everything is so fluid, if you have two guys that are great players that don't get along, it's not going to work. And so you'd be better off having, you know, two guys that are maybe a step below that truly have good chemistry and get along, because that's what's going to put out the best product on the field. And not only that, but it's going to bring as you mentioned with Purdy, it brings the rest of the team along with them. And I think for any sport, the biggest thing is when you have your best player who is a super unselfish guy that's willing to sacrifice for the team. I think about it a lot with, if you can't tell, I'm a big sports fan.
Yeah.
I watch, you know, a lot.
Well, me too.
But I think about it a lot with basketball in particular. And you have certain guys that, yes, they are great, great players, but the way that they kind of carry themselves and go about their business makes them an even better teammate. And I think the guy in the last decade that's really, really shown that is a guy like Steph Curry, mm-hmm. who is clearly one of the best basketball players
we've
ever seen.
He's in the Warriors, isn't he?
I know.
You're not a Warriors fan,
I'm not.
Okay.
But I'm diehard.
But yeah, that guy can play. Yeah, that guy's
but
special.
You can't deny the fact. And I've spent my fair share of time hating Steph Curry just because of the Warriors. And we can get into that at another time. But I can't help but be extremely impressed by him and the way he's carried himself, especially with the KD saga and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then bringing in a guy like Chris Paul, who, yes, is at the end of his career probably, but a guy that he kind of feuded with 10 years ago or whatever, when those Clippers-Warriors, you know, games were pretty heated. But Steph has just always been doing whatever is in the best interest of the team, even if it sacrifices his numbers a little bit. And he might have missed out on some all-NBA first teams and things like that because he was playing next to KD and, you know, different things. But I think for him, ultimately, all he wanted to do was win, and he was truly willing to sacrifice things in order to do so. And it's really, really impressive to see somebody at the highest level with that much money on the line that is willing to swallow his ego a little bit and say, hey, this is what's best for us to win a championship. And obviously it's shown as he's got four rings now.
Yeah. And the Kings, I mean, as long as we're talking a little bit of basketball, this is a fun show. I haven't really just got on to talk sports, I don't think, in a while. But the Kings, I mean, you think about leadership. You're building a team, you need the right leadership. The Kings obviously changed out some of their leadership, bringing in new coaching and so on. And some of those players, they have some of those players, I think, emerging. I think like De'Aaron Fox is, an emerging superstar, along with Sabonis. And, you know, I think they're on the upswing. You know, I guess I'm going to make a prediction that I don't know if they'll win more games next year than they won this year. But I think they'll at least advance to the next round of the playoffs.
Yeah, last year was the most fun I've had watching basketball in my in my life, because the last time the Kings were good, I think I was in like third grade. And so I wasn't really old enough to appreciate it. I thought the Kings were just going to be always in the playoffs and in the Western Conference Finals against the Lakers. That's just what I assumed life was. And clearly that has not been the case. So
clearly not. We had a little bit of a drought. This is to talk about setbacks, right? Yeah.
But, you know, I think De'Aaron Fox is a great example of what we just spoke about as far as sacrificing for the greater good. This is a guy who was averaging 20 plus points every year and was a guy that always was very ball dominant as since he's been in the league pretty much. And then the team goes out and brings in Sabonis and they say, hey, we actually want the offense to run through him for the most part. And Fox not only didn't complain about it, but seems like he welcomed it with open arms and then decided to play his role within that system. And then obviously, as we saw last year at the end of games, it's like, okay, now it's your time to take over. But he had the best year of his career playing within a system, sacrificing largely 75% of the game. He would sacrifice and defer a little bit to let Sabonis run the offense run through him.
Right.
And then he could take over when it was time to take over.
Fox can get to the bucket. I mean, almost on anybody.
But that sort of sacrifice in order, again, for the greater good of the team created, in my opinion, I'm a little biased, the most fun team to watch in the NBA.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, people all over the nation were saying that, so I don't feel like that's too much of a bias.
Yeah, they were, I mean, running and gunning. They were amazing.
Statistically, they had the best offense in the history of the league last year. And so it was truly amazing to watch. And just, I think for Sacramento fans like myself and you and everyone else in this city that were so starved for a good basketball product to watch night in and night out, it was really, really fun. It was appointment television for me.
Yeah, it's interesting how we in Sacramento rally around our beloved basketball team, our beloved soccer team, right? The Republic and the Kings. We really have this, and even like Uriah's team Alpha Male, we are in MMA, we root for the local. And that's one of the things that we're doing here. We haven't really talked about this, but we're working on building something called the Backyard Advantage, the most connected community in the world for local entrepreneurs. So we have invested into a lot of companies through the Growth Factory and through the other organizations I'm involved with. But what we're doing is we're rallying almost like our own fan base, our own people that live it along with us. That's the Backyard Advantage, is this tribe of savages that get it. They love Sacramento, but they also understand the power of entrepreneurship. And we're rallying almost like the people that are ringing the cowbell at a Kings game, rooting for the local entrepreneur, the local small business people. And it's actually coming together in a really cool way. And I often think about the Sacramento Kings, and especially in their heyday when I had nosebleed seats, and then when they were good when you were a kid, and now coming back, the fan support is unbelievable here.
When I was walking into the studio, I walked past a thing and it had a little tagline that said unapologetically local. And I commented to the lady that was leading me. I said, I really like that. And exactly what you just said, I think from a business standpoint, that's extremely smart because Sacramento is so proud of what is theirs. I think you see it, like you said, with the Kings, with the Republic, having things that are truly belong to Sacramento, I think is so, so important. The Giants and the A's and the Niners and the Raiders, there's a lot of people that are really passionate about all of those teams. But I think the love that you see for the Kings and for the Republic is on a completely different level because it is truly Sacramento's own. And I think the same thing with business. I think people are really, really quick to support Sacramento locally started and grown businesses because of it really has a small town feel for a city that is just exploding and getting so much bigger every year. So I unapologetically local, I think was incredibly sharp, and I really liked it.
Well, I appreciate you saying that because now we're starting to get some traction. When I first started the show, I used to say I'm on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown I love, because I grew up here as well. And people that are in the media industry think that if you start a podcast or a show of some sort, that you should be thinking national. You should be thinking about boiling the ocean. And since I grew up here, I personally care about my hometown. Maybe more, I care about entrepreneurs all over the world, but really, I think I can have more of an impact if I play in my smaller sandbox. And I really love the idea of knowing the people that I'm investing into and that I'm that are come on my show and so on versus just creating a group of acquaintances. And so I think we have that with Sacramento too. As Sacramentans, we feel like we know the people on the Republic if we're a Republic fan, and same with the Kings. We actually feel like we know them, and you actually do know them, which has got to be, again, real. I know the entrepreneurs, you know the athletes.
Well, and something that we was always really, really important when I was playing with the Republic, and I know the Kings are really, really, it's really important to them too, is all the community outreach stuff. Mm-hmm. The community supports our team so much that giving back is, it would be really just stupid not to, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, people are so, so excited anytime that any of the players can show their faces in public, and it takes such a little effort on our part to get people excited and do something good that really unites people, that it would truly be a missed opportunity if they weren't doing it. And there's plenty of people I worked with at the Republic. Kevin Burdick and Scott Moak were kind of in head of our mm-hmm. Scott Moak, who is the
Scott's
the PA,
awesome.
Yeah, he works with the Republic as, you know, one of the heads of the community outreach and stuff. And so working with those guys for me was absolutely a blast. And they set up so many different things to get out in the community and be, as you know, unapologetically local, and just make sure that we are always ingrained in the community and doing things. And I know the Kings do the same sort of thing, and I think it makes a huge impact.
Yeah, we end up working with the Kings on something called Kings Capitalize. Think about giving back. They have built the most innovative arena, I think, on Earth. But they continue to want to innovate, so they get involved in our world, our startup world, our innovative culture that we're building, and they're part of something called, or they're leading something called Kings Capitalize. We help sort of administer that effort, but they're innovating in food, they're innovating in arena experiences, and they continue to want to invest. They're giving back to the community while simultaneously learning how to provide a better fan experience.
Yeah, the first time I went to Golden One, and they were like, yeah, by the way, just open the app and order from any of these 1500 concessions that we have, and then you can either get it delivered or go pick it up, and it's easy peasy. And I was like, wow, this is pretty incredible. I mean, especially when you put the side by side to what Arco was, I mean, it was a completely different experience. Yes. And
probably never went to old Arco, did you? Was that before your time? There's old Arco, and then there's Arco, and then now there's Golden One.
I guess I've never went to old Arco. Okay. No, I only went to what turned into Sleep Train and Power Balance,
right.
Whatever, you know, various names it had towards the end.
Old Arco wasn't as good as new Arco either.
I can only imagine. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, and the new stadium, it's all part of, like I said, Sacramento. It still has the people in Sacramento, I think, still have very much of a small town vibe, but the city itself is far from it at this point. And the downtown area, just on its own, from when I was a kid to what it is now, mm-hmm. it's completely been revolutionized and is just, it's night and day, really, what the downtown scene is.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's use that as our pivot point to talk about real estate and the Sacramento economy. I know you're new to the game, but to the real estate business. But you've seen the transformation in downtown. I think when Golden One went in, you know, made a big change. Sadly, when COVID hit, we experienced more challenges in the downtown, and, you know, with being forced to close our restaurants and different businesses. And then now with the people wanting to work remote and working remote, it can feel a little quieter down there at a lot of times, unless there's a Kings game going on. It can feel a little quieter in the downtown area because people are working remotely. But what are you seeing in terms of commercial real estate and let's break it up by maybe geography, but also by different sectors. You know, we got office, industrial, you know, multifamily, I suppose, all in the commercial realm. But let's break it down in maybe the heart of Sacramento. What are you seeing in those areas in the heart of Sacramento?
Well, I think Sacramento is unique, especially if you compare it to like San Francisco or something like that, because of the Capitol and all of the government buildings that are there. Now, whether or not the government is actually going to have their employees come back to work in person is a whole other issue. I would bet on them eventually at least having to go in maybe 3 days a week or something like that. So I think there's always going to be a need for all of that office space. Right now, as you said, it seems really barren at times. depending on the time of year, especially. But I think eventually that's going to start coming back, because ultimately I think people are more productive if they're in an office. I know I certainly am.
So on office right now, is there more opportunity? Because if we're depressed at some level, because, and not just in Sacramento, the heart of Sacramento, office is probably weaker across the entire region, and for sure in San Francisco and across the globe, I suppose, because everybody got the idea to work remotely, and so office has suffered. But does that mean it's an opportunity? And why Sacramento? Is Sacramento a good opportunity if you're a real estate investor now?
I think offices certainly have been the most depressed since the pandemic. For exactly that point, a lot of people realize people are almost as productive working at home, and then you can cut the overhead cost of having the office, for especially for bigger companies. But I think it just depends on how you look at it. I mean, if an investor is willing to maybe sit on it for a couple of years before things start to come back, I think it could be a good investment. But the reality is most people are looking for something that's going to hit right now. I don't think office is going to be that, but you could also invest in an office building and repurpose it in different ways to create, you know, maybe turn an office building into more housing or something. I know there's certain investors that are looking to do things like that. It just really depends on, I guess, what the ultimate vision is for an investor. Mm-hmm. But real estate in general in Sacramento is actually pretty hot because of how many people are leaving the Bay Area and coming this way. Mm-hmm. So I think I know residential real estate, there's just not enough, there's not enough product for people to sell. I think there's a lot more people in the Sacramento area that are looking to buy homes, and there are people looking to sell homes at the moment. And for that reason, it's created the spike. And so when you add on what the interest rates are on top of the, you know, the high prices for houses, it's not very affordable for a lot of people, especially younger people my generation that are maybe looking to buy their first home. The affordability is pretty tough right now. But
it's gotten a lot more difficult. What used to feel, it's still more affordable than the Bay Area, but you come to Sacramento for something more affordable. But with interest rates where they're at, it's less affordable than it was a year, two, three ago. And so, yeah, we're noticing that. And I think that the higher interest rates are keeping people from maybe speculating on building as many homes as well. My daughter's in real estate. She has a real estate brokerage and residential. And there's still just not enough product, as you mentioned, because people don't want to sell their home because they're sitting on a 3% interest rate. Why would I sell? So they're hanging on. So it's not turning over. And so there's a supply and demand issue too. You still have people that want to buy because maybe they're a first time home buyer, or maybe they're an investor. There's still some of those people out there, but getting a loan is like I can't sell my house and get a loan. I mean, the math doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just puts a lot of people in a tough spot. And like I said, especially people around my age, I'm 30 right now. And so people that are, you know, kind of in their mid to late 20s, early 30s, that again, maybe you're getting married and maybe want to start a family, and they want to buy that house to kind of have the picture of what the American dream is, right? Starting a family with a house and starting your new life. And it just financially is really, really hard. I've seen a lot of things where they kind of compare what first time home buyers are dealing with compared to like what my parents' generation had, and kind of the difference of what people made then versus what people make now and what the housing is. And it's kind of just unreasonable to expect somebody in their mid to late 20s, early 30s to be able to afford that unless they've had some help along the way. It's really, really difficult.
Yeah. And here we are sitting in an environment where we have inflation, continuing to press on us. And where do you want to invest if you know things are going to go up in value or go up in price? You want to be probably thinking, and this is not investment advice, but just me thinking about me, is owning real assets, things that, you know, are going to go up in value, like real estate. So it still can be a great investment, but it's just harder to get into.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that we push, is kind of creating the right types of investments. You know, we have a lot of the people that we reach out to are maybe somebody that's sitting on a plot of land And right now, development in California has gotten so expensive with the cost of permits and just the length of, you know, that process and things like that. If you, if you're sitting on a plot of land, developing that is going to cost you just as much as, you know, it's going to cost you so much that it's going to take you so long to make back that investment that it might not be worth your time. So a lot of it is trying to talk to people like, hey, it'd be, if you want to sell this plot of land and we can try to get you into maybe a retail center for an investment, you can start making real money back on your investment right now. Those sorts of things are sorts of strategies that we try to, you know, preach to our clients and people that we're reaching out to, or again, with people that are maybe investors in residential real estate. Maybe you've got four or five homes that you have as rental homes and you're, you know, paying for the property management and you got this and that and all these different things that can go wrong. Somebody, you get one bad tenant in and all of a sudden you got a nightmare on your hands that you don't want to deal with. So preaching to people, hey, let's sell those homes, you know, work those into a 1031 to get into, again, something like a triple net investment. And because retail centers are still hot, right? I mean, because of the sheer amount of people that are coming into Sacramento, the retail side of things is still very, very
strong. That's interesting to me. So office is soft. Retail's hot, even though we've all changed our buying habits to buy online, you know, buy from Amazon, what have you. Yet, if you have a location that it can generate traffic, then it's hot. And so I didn't realize how hot it was.
Well, retail in the sense of like maybe not necessarily things that you can get on Amazon, but if you have like a barbershop or if you have, you know, things that people need to go out of the house to do, or maybe it's just a restaurant or, you know, like something like a, like, you know, Crumble Cookies is across the street.
Right, those are right.
Those are things that people will leave their house for. And so if you can try to get in with good tenants and stuff, I mean, it's a really good investment. And again, it's mostly non-hassle as long as you're vetting your tenants and making sure it's not someone that's going to be in there going crazy.
Well, I've seen some of the larger retail, or maybe it's a little bit of the upscale retail, trying to create an atmosphere where there are events. It's sort of event driven. I'm thinking of like the Fountains in Roseville or the Galleria Mall. They're destinations that you don't necessarily just go there to do your shopping. You might go there to be part of this experience. Just go hang out at the Fountains.
Yeah, they might have live music on a Friday night or something like that.
So I feel like I've seen some of that happening in some of these more upscale shopping areas. Do we see that happening in sort of what's called the strip mall thing? Is how are they attracting those, you know, the traffic?
Yeah, not necessarily. I think, you know, the best investments are just if you're on a high traffic area or if you're near a a big neighborhood or something, people are going to need to go out and do things. And so if you're near a neighborhood, you've got however many thousand people live three blocks from where you're located, you're going to drive plenty of traffic to that space. But that's part of the valuation of what these different strip centers are. And a lot of it depends if someone's willing to spend $5 million on a strip center versus $1.2 million on a strip center. You kind of get what you pay for at a certain point.
What about multifamily and industrial? Are those, I would assume multifamily is still pretty hot because you still have this shortage of places to live and people want to live here. Is that hotter than industrial, or which are you seeing like more activity on?
I would say the multifamily, from what I've seen, is mostly big investment groups that are putting in the big multifamily centers. Like Folsom has continuously been a lot of development with multifamily. You could see them up on the hills, all those apartment buildings there when you're driving down 50. So that sort of thing is pretty hot, but I think that's more of like the bigger investment groups that are doing that. Industrial is continuing to be pretty hot as well. I mean, there's a lot of businesses that never slowed down during the pandemic, and a lot of those businesses needed industrial space to continue going.
Right, like warehousing type space, so they can ship stuff all over the world. Very interesting. So do you have a crystal, what, if you pulled out the crystal ball for us, maybe, I know you're only 1 year in, but you, and maybe you mentioned Paul Frank, is the guy that you work with. He's been doing this a long time. What's the crystal ball from your firm kind of saying about Sacramento and the trajectory? Because we're still growing in Sacramento, whereas other cities around California seem to be declining in population. Sacramento's growing a little bit and significantly more than, you know, other areas.
Yeah, the conversations that I've had with people that I really trust, Paul's one of them. My one of my partners I work with, John Bias, has also been really, really good to me. They basically said, tough year for me to have my first year as a real estate agent, just given the current market with the high interest rates and stuff. But the other side of it is, if I can survive this year, it's just going to get better and better, because I think this is probably going to be, at least in the short-term future, probably one of the hardest years. But from everyone I've talked to, your first year in the industry, you're going to have to really grind it out regardless. And so I might as well grind it out. And then hopefully, in theory, it gets a lot easier for me. And I think, wow, after that first year, things really were great. But, you know, we'll see how it goes.
You're in position. Real estate business generally, though, tends to be about relationships. And I've seen that in commercial real estate, residential real estate, and even the stuff I do around entrepreneurship. It tends to be about real estate, or excuse me, relationships. So that's, I think, a built-in call it advantage for you, because you've obviously got great people skills, but you've lived here your whole life, and with your side gigs, you've got plenty of avenues into creating great relationships with people with a lot of influence. One of the people that I look up to that we were talking about earlier is Kevin Nagel, and the kind of way that he's helped inspire business people to achieve more. Are the people that you look up to now as you're entering this this new career for yourself? Is there people that you're like, okay, that's kind of who I might aspire to understand better and maybe even emulate at some level?
Definitely. You mentioned Kevin, who owner of the Republic, someone that I've been fortunate enough to have a relationship with for the past 7-8 years or so. He's been really, really good to me since I retired from the team, and has been someone that I can lean on and reach out to for advice and just to pick his brain here and there. Haven't done any business with him. Maybe sometime in the future there will be a time and a place where that will be a thing. But as of now, it's just been a friendship and, you know, somebody that I do look up to and really trust and value his opinion on various things regarding all kinds of different business. So that's definitely one. You mentioned Paul Frank, who is, who I work with and work for, but is also someone that has been incredibly successful as an entrepreneur, built himself up in this business, but he's got his hand in all kinds of different investments and different businesses, and is someone that I'm just trying to soak up like a sponge everything he's doing, because he has been an extremely successful person as well. So, And the fortunate thing is, like you said, it's all about relationships and going to different networking events and things like that. And so all the time I'm meeting different people that are really successful in this industry, or people in different industries that are successful that, I think I can pull different parts and different pieces of wisdom from all these different people. And if I can successfully just get 1% from all of these different people I meet, I think in the long run, I'll look back and be like, wow, I have a incredible wealth of knowledge that I took, this piece from Mark Haney, and I took this piece from that person. And, it's just being fortunate to be in a position to have these sorts of conversations and just get to know different people and, hopefully continue those relationships in the future and continue to grow.
Okay. So I'm thinking this would probably be my final question, unless you want me to ask you anything else, but you're have a new baby, and people are beginning to look to you, maybe not beginning, people are also looking to you with that wisdom. Your children for sure will look to you. And there's a lot of people that are not where you are today. And maybe some closing thoughts about how you expect to maybe coach meaning mentor and parent your children and child, but maybe like advice for the up and comer that on how to achieve and how to really win in life.
Well, I think a big thing for me is not being too proud to ask questions. especially this past year. Again, this has been brand new to me to this point. I was playing soccer and all of a sudden I was getting into real estate. So all of the real estate stuff was completely brand new to me. And if I was too proud to ask questions about things that might be considered stupid questions, I would still be trying to figure out the answers to those questions. And so I think that's something for me. Same thing with sports. I was fortunate enough that when I was in the last couple of years of my career, there was a couple of academy kids that the team signed that were 17, 18 years old and were really, really talented players, but were trying to find their way from a mental standpoint of how to compete with grown men, with adults, and kind of find their spot. And I was fortunate to be in a position where I could help these kids when they had questions. And my biggest thing that I always told them is, like, don't ever hesitate to ask a question. If you have any question, just ask it, because the worst case scenario is you realize the answer on your own after you realize, oh, that is dumb, and I actually had the answer the whole time, or something like that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you already know the answer, but you just don't have the confidence to decide that is the correct answer. And so I think asking questions and not being too proud is huge. And then along those lines, once you have the answer, being confident in your answer, being confident in that whatever you're doing is the right thing to be doing. If you're second guessing yourself as you're doing something, it's going to be really hard to be successful in whatever that may be.
I love it. Well, thanks for joining me on the show. You got to ask enough questions. That's the same in anything, for sure. It happens in entrepreneurship. We need to ask questions. Nobody knows everything. Even the old guard, they don't know everything. And we've got to ask questions no matter where we're at in our life. And then once you are committed, then make sure you fully commit.
Well, and to that point, something that I'm hopefully going to take with me as I continue to get older and more experienced is, oftentimes, you know, the new guard has answers that the old guard doesn't have, right?
I mean,
if you look at all the advances in technology and things like that, I'm not so naive that I think that where we're at technologically right now is going to be the best that we get, so that my kids, you know, when I'm 20 years from now, when my kids are going through college and stuff, that my technology is going to be better than what they're dealing with. And so I think continuing to get better and, you know, again, not being too proud, maybe if you're the old guard, asking the young guard for help, that's a huge part as well.
100%. Kamawasa, I'm so glad you decided to stay in Sacramento and kind of, you know, put the real roots down here permanently. And you're truly a gem. I appreciate you sharing the story, but also just for everything that you are doing to drive our local economy now.
Oh, Sacramento proud, baby. I'm definitely not going anywhere. Fortunately, my wife is also from here, so our roots are thick, and we'll be here for good.
All right. Thanks for coming on the show.
Appreciate it.
And to all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship and for the backyard advantage, and of course, all of you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, our security, and our way of life. Here at the Haney Biz, the Mark Haney Show, and the Growth Factory, we're never above you. We're never below you. Always by your side.
This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.